Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. You should know that by the name of the podcast and by the fact that this is the 14th episode now. So today, I'm joined, I'm going to say this every time from now on, I'm joined by a special guest, but that goes without saying or else I wouldn't be on the podcast, so I'm just going to say a guest. And it is Simon Bennett, who is the co-founder and CEO of AOE Creative, or as I like to say, AOE? I don't know. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it. Is it just sounding out the letters, or can it be a sound?
Whatever you want, man. Whatever you want. I mean, AOE, you know, like area of effect is, you know, supposed to be clever, but I don't mind it being ooh as well. That's kind of...
I was hoping it would be like a real secret thingy. You'd never tell anyone what AOE was, or at least on here. But I mean, now we know. I mean, yeah, it's probably good that people know instead of it just being a random word like I tried to make it, you know? So
it's like one of those things, you know, like, damn, I'm getting into serious stuff already, but like when you make a brand in gaming, but you also want to do some stuff for people who aren't in gaming,
right?
You can't really call yourself like the ultimate poser agency ever. You know, you have to like at least make a name that doesn't scare the shit out of brands that aren't in the space. So that was our goal with AOE.
that makes sense. So we had a little chat before this, and you say like not too much of yourself is out there. So like kind of like myself before I did this whole podcast thing, like I wasn't trying to be a personality. I don't care. I'd just rather get shit done. And I know we're aligned on that, but I kind of want to get into it just a little bit, at least just a little flavor of kind of your discovery of esports and the path that led you to where you are. You don't need to say every single job role in every company, because we'll get into some bits and bobs there. You passed before AOE, for example. But yeah, just roughly, like, what was your introduction? Was you the best player in the world on a game I've ever heard of, or what's the case?
I thought I was, you know. My name's Simon. So I started in the industry officially about 16 years ago. I actually started at Blizzard. That was my first job,
right,
in gaming. I think I have a fairly funny story about how I got a job at Blizzard. I used to run what at the time was like a semi-pro World of Warcraft guild. We were doing like World First and stuff like that. And I originally trained as a teacher.
Okay.
So I used to triple science in the UK. And specialized in biology, which has nothing to do with gaming in any way. And I like dropped out of the system there because I just, well, you're in the UK, you know how terrible they treat teachers pretty much, especially male ones.
I was one of the people treating them badly, actually, from the other side.
Yeah. Well, when I realized that, like, out of a 1 hour lesson, 2 of those hours were writing documents on, you know, like to keep myself secure and safe, I was like, this is a weird place to work.
Right. But, yeah,
and then I was paid like 18 grand a year for, you know, a 80 hour a week job. I dropped out of teaching pretty hard and spent like 6 months super depressed. So I didn't know what I was doing in my life. The only consistent was gaming, which I've been doing since I was a kid, obviously, like every one of us have been. And I was running this WoW guild, and my friends in the guild, the other officers who I ran the guild with, were like, hey, well, maybe you should, you know, put your CV into Blizzard because they're hiring at the moment. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. I sent in my CV. Didn't know that all of those officers already worked at Blizzard, and that I was running a guild, because they weren't allowed to tell people that they work for Blizzard. I still think they're not allowed to.
Okay.
So I got like a, hey, yeah, come in. I, you know, flew up to Ireland on like the last dollars I had. For an interview, and turned up the interview, and there's like these four people standing at the, you know, the entrance, this like big Swedish dude, this like super skinny girl. I'm like, who are you guys? And they like reeled off their in-game names. And
oh,
I was
wow,
like,
okay.
Shit. Like, so they like fast tracked my CV through. I started at Blizzard basically for the first couple of months. I was the GM, you know, I was that guy who did customer support and appeared in game and made fireworks go off for you and shit like that in World of Warcraft.
Right.
I loved the game, but I had a massive passion for esports. Like when it was the StarCraft 1 to StarCraft 2 days, and I was absolutely obsessed with Tastosis and Day 9 dailies and stuff like that. And then, like, I think they realized pretty quickly that they wouldn't shut me up about those things. So they just decided to put me in a position where I could tell people about those things. So I basically went to working with esports at Blizzard before they really had esports outside of Korea and the US. And I was teaching people about StarCraft and like why Tastosis is the best casting duo of all time and what it means to esports, for what, you know, what is this new way of commentary in esports, why it's relevant to like why esports is going to be massive basically, and like why gaming and esports in general is going to be huge. And in doing so, I think I probably just got noticed by a load of people who were in the executive team there and moved up to management. And then I got headhunted when Blizzard did that huge layoff wave. I got headhunted to move to Paris to work for Wargaming.net.
Right.
And literally my job role there was like do esports. That was my whole like thing. They didn't know anything about it. It was for World of Tanks, which is not an esports title at all. Do esports. And I started with a free Alienware laptop in the office by myself, you know, just making my own tournaments and running tournaments with the World of Tanks community, which is actually pretty awesome. And actually, when I left Wargaming, we had like a professional broadcast studio. We did the first ever IEM Katowice. You know, we were broadcasting to like 30, 40,000 people a fucking World of Tanks game, which, you know, and it made me realize like there's a big thing around gaming that isn't just esports, but there's also like the competitive gaming side of things, which is the real reason why people want to play esports. You know, esports is just we always say it's like, it's just a badge that you put on a really good competitive game when it's got to a certain point. You don't make esports. You're like awarded the title esports.
Yep.
And that sort of really chained me into going and exploring the industry as a whole, right? So I went and worked for Razer for some time, doing all of their branding and marketing in Europe, you know, sponsoring events, looking at like the best ways to market the products. I pulled Razer out of Gamescom, for example, because it's just a complete waste of money. We looked at like how we did process. We sponsored some more out there small scale tournament structures, like right. Beyond the Summit, Take TV, Face It, you know, the ECS, stuff like that, and really focus on like how do you build proper community around the product and community around marketing. And then from that like transition, I actually went and worked for Face It. I did the first ever ECS, helped them with the design of that, ran the first one at Wembley, then transitioned to, I left Face It and made my own company in the UK, which lasted all of like 2 months. And then I met this dude from the US. He was like, yeah, we're making this thing. We're making this thing called esports. At the time it was called Legacy Esports, which turned into Infinite Esports, which was the company that bought Optic Gaming and Houston Outlaws. And I was part of the initial team coming in to build that, right? So I joined them as their VP of marketing. I met this dude called Markel Lee, who was a pretty cool dude, super incredible graphic designer. He was their creative director. He'd been the creative director of EG. He ran his own fighting game events, stuff like that. Really like scrappy designer. We literally became best friends in like 2 months. When we'd actually planned to do AOE when we were at Infinite as part of like that ecosystem they built.
Which I do want to talk about more, by the way. I do want to talk about that a bit.
I'm available to talk a bit about that for sure.
Okay.
I have my opinions.
Yep.
We concepted what a kind of thing like AOE at the time, using the team. It was a big team there because we were actually, the way Infinite was put together was it was like a series of companies under the Infinite umbrella, except for the design and marketing and social media side. We were a department, and we were the only department that anyone wanted to work with. So we'd have like the guys from Cloud9 coming across, you know, some other people coming across like, hey, could you help us with this? And we actually couldn't. So we were like, well, let's just make a company. That makes a lot of sense. Like, and we planned it, and then the whole infinite thing happened. And it just gave us the kick up the ass that we needed, really, to start the company. You know, it's starting your own company is super scary, it's super risky. And we were like, well, fuck it, let's go. You know, we're just gonna go. And we started the company working out of a spare room in my apartment. We planned to do, you know, like that company kickoff stuff, you know, the way you build your website and, you know, you then go out and have to go and source clients. We had three clients on day one of the company.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, it turns out people want to work with us. So I guess to screw all of our stuff, we're just going to go do stuff with them. And we've never really looked back. We've just been plowing forward. We just actually completed our first year as a company. And we were actually break even. And for I'm told for an agency that is like almost unheard of. So super proud of the team. We've grown from initially it was three people. We're now at about 11 people. But we still, yeah, we do. We're the sort of elevator pitch of us is we're a creative design and brand marketing agency. So we do literally full spectrum. So we do pretty much everything all the way from, you know, strategizing your basic social media and merchandise and things like that, and all of the marketing and branding and creative around that,
right,
all the way through to like creating complete brands from scratch, all of their launch strategy, all of their marketing strategy, you know, game design, game development, and game strategy with publishers, social media management, everything and anything. And, you know, there's a lot of good agencies in the world that do similar things to us, but we have this unique selling point, which is, you know, we are born within the gaming world, right? So we understand this audience better than any other agency that does what we do. And so far, at least, that's been really good for us. So, and this year we already made more in the first 2 months of this year than we made all of last year. So we're expecting this year is going to be pretty good. We're hoping at least.
Mm. I would expect that with the size of clients that I've heard, you know, like fair play. Like, yeah, you'd imagine there's quite a bit of dosh involved in that. So, I mean, obviously you've earned your stripes in that sense.
Well, it's actually really interesting. The bigger the clients we get, the more we realize how much they were getting ripped off before,
yep,
by other agencies, because we still charge. I think it's something that Adam Mathisella said that I really like about what they do. And we're pretty similar in that sense, is we're pretty open about what our costs are and what our markups are. And because we came from the esports world, we've done events for like $50 and made them look like $50,000 events, right? Like, we've all done that, all of us in esports, because we've used to years of having no money whatsoever. So we'll come to like a sports client, for example, and quote them a, you know, $500,000 project for a brand or for doing their social media account. And they're shocked at how cheap that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're speaking to huge agencies who are charging them $3 or $4 million for the same thing. And that's a big role of ours. It's, you know, it's like, we don't, a really important factor of what we do is we just want to do really cool shit. Like, we're super passionate, and that's our driving factor. And actually, we got investment based on that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And because for us, it's about really dragging the gaming and especially esports world into like a AAA quality space, but without having to make those sacrifices that you would normally make by working with a huge faceless corporation or something like that. So
yeah.
That's our drive, and we're sort of now meeting other agencies in the space, like the Story Mob and people like that, who all kind of have very similar attitudes to the space that we do. And we're now, I was actually, I hate using Gary Vee because I don't really like his stuff, but he had made a really good statement about you should always invest in the infrastructure of a new industry. So it's really fun to be part of that infrastructure and be like really like every day we're learning new things and we're working on exciting projects, and it just never gets old. It's super fun.
That's awesome, man. So people who know me know that what I've just heard there is just too positive. So what I need to do is go to a less positive time, right? And I will give some context and some of my understanding of everything, right? So we're going to talk about Infinite Esports Entertainment for a bit. And I'm not asking you to slag anyone off, right? Or any, go into anything, but basically, so around the time of it being announced and seeing all the different plans for the different business units and stuff, right? So you got your Triggerfish and your IPI and Sector 6, Third Label, blah, blah, blah. And everything sounded cool, right? I was like, okay, that's a good premise, because esports organizations as a whole are like inherently not making money. TSM's claiming to be the only profitable org now. I'm pretty sure it's bullshit.
It is profitable orgs, but not many tier one orgs are profitable.
Oh no, I'd say an organization like Space Station Gaming has got more chance than but we can get into that later on. But I mean, so I thought the premise was good, right? Not many organizations are staying afloat. Oh, they are for now, but eventually shit could crash, right? So it's like, okay, like building like an ecosystem around the big brand, like one of the biggest brands, Optic Gaming, that kind of stand on their own 2 feet, work with Optic Gaming and obviously with Allegiance and Obey as well, but also work with outside companies and such, bringing Dosh that way. I was like, okay, that sounds great. And then it comes to the execution, right? And obviously, we don't get to see a lot of the public don't get to see a lot of what's gone on. And as time has gone on, I've like got pretty well connected with like a lot of the people from within Infinite. So I've heard a lot of stuff. And I will say this: you don't have to nod your head, smile, say anything, but at the time of everything going on, there was a divide where it was Optic, so like the personalities and such, pre-investment, it was like those against Infinite. That was a narrative that was being peddled by a lot of the content creators and personalities, right? Saying that all the Infinite people were the ones doing everything wrong, and there was only like one or two good people there, but it was a fucking huge company with so many employees because it scaled so fast. I failed to believe that only one or two of them are decent. You've only like given one or two an actual chance, right? Because you just don't want, you want to go against corporate and all this kind of shit. Anyway, that's bullshit for the most part, right? I've spoken to enough people on every side of it. That's quite bullshit. There were plenty of amazing people hired, like very capable people from what I'm aware of, that were just thrown into a naff situation. So I just want to get your kind of thoughts on the premise of Infinite, not necessarily the execution of it. Whether you think that was a sustainable thing, a good project, whether we should see it in the future, whether we will, and if you want to go into why you think it failed, you can do. But as I say, I don't want to force you to be bad mouthing people you don't want to, you know, otherwise.
I tend not to bad mouth people anyway, but
we'll leave that to me then. I'll do that.
Yeah, premise wise, I think, well, we're already seeing other Infinites, right? So you've got Immortal Gaming Club, you've got Space Station Gaming, is like a mini version of the same thing. We're seeing Cloud9 starting to do something like that too. Team Liquid has got Liquid Media. You know, it's got a number of other sort of sub-brands underneath it. So conceptually, I think it's a genius idea. And I think that it is how we're going to see esports moving. Like even looking at FaZe, you know, underneath the FaZe brand, or even 100 Thieves now, seeing them branch out. Well, I've also got this content team here, and we've also got like a development, and then we've got a movie studio or like a videographer studio, and then we've got a marketing, you know, like they're already doing that. Though there is like an inherent issue with esports teams doing it, in that they don't want to do it with other esports. There's no industry, right? Which is part of the reason why we made AOE, right? Is that we know that there's a bunch of esports teams that want to do that but can't afford it. But if they just had access to an agency that could do it for them, then in many cases that's super positive. So infrastructure, like concept wise, super good idea. And when I came into Infinite, there was like seven of us. So I'm definitely part of that core founding team. And I would definitely say expectation versus reality meme is a big one for Infinite. You know, especially when we were in a bit of a unique position that because we were the design, marketing and creative side, I think we got off a lot easier with everybody. We got on really well with certain people from the original Optic group. You know, so I think that to some extent we didn't get that animosity all that much. We didn't see it as much. Right. But it was definitely a case of, you know, coming in and mummy and daddy are fighting. And, you know, you don't, it's very hard to do something cool with a brand when it's being blocked one way or another way based on petty squabbling.
Yeah.
You know, that really hurt the Optic brand in the first sort of 6 to 8 months of the Infinite thing. Was just, there wasn't a direction that everyone was happy to go in. And I think, you know, from the top side of things, I think that really hurt the opportunity it had. And then, you know, there was some questionable decision making for sure.
Yep.
On both sides.
Yep.
Not gonna lie. But if you look at like the Houston Outlaws brand, for example, you know, that was a brand where we were just let loose. We had no blocking. And in, you know, 9 months, we made it the most talked about esports team on Twitter, like new esports Twitter, right? So we knew it was possible. It was just much harder to do. We only really got to, from a marketing and branding side of things, we only really got to work on Optic like 8 months after the acquisition.
Right.
Because it was just stuck in politics. And like, I just don't give a shit about politics. I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I do really cool shit. And I think that to some extent, the guys at Optic knew we just wanted to do really cool shit. So they kind of left us alone and there wasn't as much worry. And obviously we're creatives. So, and they are also creatives. So I think there wasn't that friction that there is if it's like a sales business team versus creatives, for example.
Well, I think something that kind of sums up like the just how fucked up Infinite was, right, and the whole little Optic situation. So the whole narrative went from fuck Chris Chaney, so he was like the founder and president, and then like got later was replaced by obviously Optic J, right? So the narrative went from fuck Chaney to fuck Optic J or fuck J, and then even like Aaron Create, for example, was saying fuck J after for like 3 months after everything went down there and IGC bought Optic. I think that there was like the defining moment where I was like, yeah, it's all just fucked.
I feel so bad for Jay. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like there was some mistakes made, but he did not deserve most of what he got. Like he was the fool guy, right? Like it really sucks for him because I think it really hit him hard. And I think that's really unfair. Like it's really hard to make a bunch of really clever decisions when there's like a war going on in your company, right? And I think that a lot of that landed on his shoulders because he didn't leave the brand because he would die for Optic. You know, like he really loved that brand. Like I remember being, when we were first discussing with Blizzard around the Outlaws branding. I remember that was one of the first ever meetings I sat in was when we were first doing that branding. When I sat in there like as an executive for the company. And I remember like one of my first experiences of Jay in a working environment was Blizzard really wanted to do the Outlaws to be red, white, and blue, like America. We were very focused on it's like America's team. We wanted to be like the Dallas Cowboys of esports. And that was our goal. And Jay was like, it is going to be black and green Optic colors. And there is no discussion, you know, like he was, and I was like, damn, this dude is a beast. Like, oh shit. Like this guy's all about it, you know? And that was badass. And I was like, that's what he felt about that brand. Like he would have died for that brand, like 100%. And like, well, he kind of did die for that brand, sadly.
well you know. he went to caffeine afterwards. I think he took a sabbatical after that, actually, just take a break. But as well, though, he actually got a lot of credit for turning things around once, obviously, the Chaney and Jay switch happened. But like, with like partnerships coming through and such. But like, partnerships take a long time, as a rule, to figure out. So how he can come in and in 2 weeks, like, bring, like, Nissan on and get, I don't know, Game Fuel or something. I can't remember the exact branding at the time. And make, I don't know, but it was just like, he did not make all of these changes. Just come in and just go, right, everything's sorted now. But he got a lot of credit there. So it was like, it must have been complete mental whiplash for him. But I mean...
Yeah. I mean, it's like... It's like one of those things, right? Like, a lot of people would say Elon Musk is a really, really awful person when it comes to being a leader, because he just is just constantly expanding in every way. It's just his investment is just bottomless. So, and to some extent, I think even the way Infinite was done, if it had been an Elon, you know, a Tesla situation where the investment was bottomless, Infinite would be the powerhouse in esports right now. You know, but at the end of the day, not everyone gets that luxury, right? Like, investment is not bottomless in most cases. You know, and I think that it's just one of those things, right? It's just a really bad mismatch of jigsaw pieces to make a puzzle, right? And the puzzle looked like it was complete, but really all the pieces were just forced together, right? So that it, you know, eventually is just going to break. And that's kind of why.
There wasn't a
piece that was wrong, you know.
Just didn't come together fully. But at least what we've seen is from the fallout of Infinite, I guess, is a lot of that the people, especially the good people, have kind of found the footing elsewhere in a good role that kind of suits them with decent organizations and stuff, you know. So you got like Typo at LG and as the eSport Locker guys and the eSport Stadium guys there and everything. Mm-hmm. Obviously, AOE, you've got quite a few there yourself, and then We Are Nations and Sector 6 and everything like that. Like, it seems to have gone pretty well. And then as John doing partnerships, I believe, at Dignitas, and, you know, like, so it seems like things have gone quite well.
Yeah, Jay and the Complexity. Yeah, I think what it really did was really cool was it brought a load of really, really good people together, like really smart people, and we met a lot of people, and we had a lot of really good, like, brainstorming, as you know, conceptually. And I think it was a great, like, melting pot for young potential entrepreneurs in the space. So I don't think anyone that worked there really feels like it was a negative part of their life, right? Like, it, for me, it was huge. Like, I met my business partner. It moved me to America from England, which, speaking England, is nothing in growth size compared to the US when it comes to new business.
Do you miss the UK?
Not really. I miss, like, friends and family, but I don't miss anything else in the UK. It feels so... like, restraining to be there. To think back about when I was trying to start an agency in the UK and I was struggling to get like a $30,000 investment, you know, because, you know, just to live for a year to try it out, and then coming to the US with like honestly, the idea was really only about twice as good when it really should have been 10 times as good. And, you know, I didn't even have to speak to more than one investor, and they were just like, love this idea. This is great for us. We understand this. We believe in you guys. It's not a big risk. We're just going to go with it. Like, just go ahead. You know, that alone, for me, just the opportunity value of the US is so huge.
Yeah. Well, I'm stuck in a tiny town in the north of England, right? And you say, I'm in England and it's restrictive because everything's happening in London, right? It's a little bit in Manchester, a little bit in Birmingham, a little bit in Leicester, but like 90% of UK happenings, esports-wise, is London, right? And like, no one's going to pay for me to go down there just for one day. I don't fancy a 2.5-hour train ride down and then back up in the same day. So it's even restrictive being in this country, mate. So, I mean, yeah, you're not missing much. And obviously all the Brexit fuckery that's just gone down and is continuing to go down as well. You know, yeah.
I was in the US when they were doing the Trump election.
Oh, right.
After the Brexit, I was doing the Face It event in Anaheim.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I was in California, you know, in LA, you know, one of the most liberal parts of America. And they're like, nah, it's not going to happen. I'm like, I don't know, guys. We just made the dumbest decision. You could too. You know that. And they're like, nah. And then the next day, I'm like, I don't want to say it, but.
It's crazy. It's almost like we want meme culture to continue, so we just keep making these big fuck off memes just to fuel us for the next few years, you know. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Right. I wanna go to what I think is a tough question. I think it's like a hard hitting question, but it might not be at all. Though the follow up question I have will throw you under the bus a bit. It's up to you how you react to that. So the first one, what the fuck comprises of a compelling, like, good brand in esports? Because it's such a young scene, right? As you say, like, it's young, like, it's developing still. Not too long. It's the first of its kind industry wise, right? Really, it's not really like sports. It's just an amalgamation of sports, technology, entertainment. So, in your experience, your ancient wisdom at this point now, 16 years in esports, what makes a good brand?
Well, I mean, first of all, it totally changes over time, right? Like, a brand that was a good brand 10... Oh, let's take Optic, for example, right? A brand that was a good brand 10 years ago, for certain things, will not necessarily be able to... You can't just keep doing the same thing for 10 years and stay a good brand. You know, like, that's not how branding works, period, let alone... And many of the things in gaming are really not unique to gaming, right? They happen in the real world all the time, right? And I always say real world, I mean, like, the not gaming and the
gaming's real. Yeah. Come on,
I don't want to be in the real world. I want to be in the gaming world. That's not cool. So really, what makes a there's a number of reasons why a number of ways you can make a good brand, but it starts with understanding what you actually want to do, right? Like, we actually did a keynote a couple of months back about this, and one of the things we've noticed, especially in esports, is the creative process for branding kind of goes like this. I've got an esports team. We just got into something big, name X League, whatever. We need a cool logo. Okay, well, I got this friend on Twitter who does some cool logos. Okay, cool. What's our name? We're just going to use the letters or like the name, and we're going to like draw a cool logo, and that's our brand. And Optic survived with that for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no branding concept about what Optic was at all. It had a brand, but it was completely not decided by the people who made Optic. It was just the community built their brand, and what they did built their brand. Nowadays, you can't do that. Like, nowadays, you've got to really go in and say, right, okay, so what are we trying to do here? Like, what league are we in? What's our audience? How do we speak to that audience? You know, how do we want to speak, right? Like, how do we want our brand to be represented to others? And what can make us different from the other 4 million brands in this space? Because it's not, you know, when Optic first came out and was doing YouTube videos and content that was frag movies, there wasn't a lot of other brands doing that. Nowadays, every single brand in esports is doing cool frag movie content videos. So you can't make a new brand now like you did with Optic and do it again, right? You have to do something unique and new and fresh, and you have to speak to an audience. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of the reason why brands like 100 Thieves, like FlyQuest actually is a really good example right now of a brand that's doing it.
TreeQuest.
Yeah, they're like polarizing themselves on purpose. And that's because they're saying, right, so we don't want to be like this generic all-star brand in gaming, because there's a lot of those. We need to have like a goal and a meaning and something about us that attracts a certain audience. And that audience is like our core group. So nowadays, what makes a good brand in esports is understanding what you want to do with yourselves and making something that speaks to that. Because we speak to a bunch of people and they're like, yeah, well, we see this 100 Thieves brand. We kind of want to be like 100 Thieves. It's like, yeah, but 100 Thieves is already 100 Thieves.
Yeah, you can't be you can't be 200 Thieves or 101 Thieves.
And actually, ironically, even 100 Thieves is struggling to be 100 Thieves now, because they've gotten so big that they can't be edgy anymore. And it's this transition, right? It's like understanding. I think 100 Thieves had a really amazing image of what their brand should be after 2 years. I don't think they know what their brand is now.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think they're in a space now, which you're seeing a lot of brands in, Cloud9, for example, Team Liquid, like a lot of brands where they've gotten to a certain size, and TSM were one of the first brands to do this, where they came in super edgy and then they got really, really big and popular. And when you're really big and popular, you can't be edgy anymore, because part of being edgy is about being small and scrappy. And then they've gone like, well, we don't really know anything else other than doing the sort of edgy stuff. So what else do we do? Well, let's get a bunch of people in from another industry that have done cool stuff, right? Let's get someone from Nike, or let's get someone from like Supreme or And1, or, you know, one of those brands that they consider cool. And the brand starts to transition towards that direction.
Okay.
And because it's doing that, it's actually losing its original identity, which was that we're edgy, we're scrappy, you know, we're from the community, that side of things. And we end up being just another brand that's trying to be cool. And it's, you know, a good example. 100 Thieves is a super good example of this with their latest merch drop, right? And looking at how the community reacted to that, is that it shows to me, don't get me wrong, some of that merch is actually pretty cool.
I agree.
But what it shows is that they don't really understand their audience anymore. You know, that it's too big for them to, I don't think they've sat down and gone like, what's our demographic now? Like, it's not just like hype beast COD kids now. It's also a bunch of League of Legends fans. It's also a bunch of Fortnite fans. It's a bunch of fans of Courage. You know, those are all different groups of people now. Yeah. They're not, you know, someone who's a fan of Courage is probably not going to be edgy, because mm-hmm. Courage is super safe. He's super family friendly. Like,
Would you say they're actually staying true to the brand by not trying to please everyone, because they know they can't? So they're going in, this is the direction we're going in, and that's it. Like Nade shot in a video just said, like, I believe in it. We've sat down. This is what I like. This is what Doug Barber, the guy he brought on from Reigning Champ, I think it was, this is what we like. We've decided upon. We know everyone's not isn't going to like it. That's fine by us. The people that do, go and buy it. Would you not say that's like staying true to the brand, or like carving out a new lane and saying, right, we're just doing what we want. You're along for the ride if you want to be.
I think it is a direction to take, yes. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad one.
Okay.
But I don't think it's done in a planned setting. I think it's more done in a reactionary setting, because I don't think that's what they thought when they put that merch line out. I think they thought everyone was going to like it. And then not everyone did like it. And they went, well, okay, well, actually, that's not that big a deal, right? So I don't think it's the wrong choice. I think it's the right choice. But I also think that they have to be super careful, because brands that go that direction need to be really certain that that's the goal that also their investors want. And also that they now have a lot of investors. And unfortunately, in many cases, large investors require like want large growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is pretty negative around like brand building, because it pushes you towards mediocrity, which is super dangerous for brands, right? Like, but if 100 Thieves can pull an Adidas and be cool but also mainstream, then they've hit that golden ticket.
Without a doubt.
Because to me, that's what I'd be saying to 100 Thieves if they were asking me about branding. It's like, you should be aiming towards Adidas, right? Like, Adidas is still super cool. They've still got their edgy side, where they've got like a couple of brands on the side which are very streetwear, but they still have the fact that like 99% of Americans buy an Adidas product at some point or own one. Like, so they've managed to keep this perfect middle ground where they're super edgy in one area, but they're still very mainstream, and their fan, like their audience covers everything. And I think that 100 Thieves is the closest to getting that right.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could definitely get that right. And if they do, oh my God, they will hit a serious big upturn in the space, and hurt a lot of other brands in the process, actually.
Yeah. So with you saying like branding evolves, obviously things change, and this industry, it feels like 1 week is like 1 month of happenings. Like, it's fucking ridiculous, right? So we've seen like Golden Guardians rebrand, and Evil Geniuses. And North, yeah, I agree. Golden Guardians is probably the best I've seen so far, actually, out of the recent ones, at least. And
they put some thought behind it too, which I thought was really nice to see.
And as 15 others I can't think of, but like North did the questionable one with the Goofy Dragon, and as I say, Evil Geniuses, they kind of backtrack and said, "Oh no, we're adding in the thing afterwards," and then they haven't done. They've just left it the same, so that they weren't. They didn't even commit to what they the new direction they'd gone in, so on and so forth. Like, do you think that's just literally a reaction to the fact that the industry has aged since those brands came about. Because, I mean, Golden Guardians came in like 2018, like the LCS, right? And I think North was like 2017, 2016 yeah, maybe, so.
There's different dilemmas that they have, right? Like, Golden Guardians have a dilemma that they're coming into a scene that is heavily dominated by some very old school esports brands. So it's way harder to be visible in the LCS, like in general, because you're going up against brands like TSM and Liquid and 100 Thieves that are, and I mean, actually, even though 100 Thieves is a new brand, they're still kind of an old brand because before 100 Thieves, it was Nadeshot.
Yep.
Right? Like Nadeshot is a brand in himself, and the original 100 Thieves brand was him. Like he was the brand. And they've done a pretty good job in transitioning that out to be more diverse. But at the end of the day, that was why 100 Thieves had that great kickoff at the start, was that Nadeshot himself is such a charismatic and likable character.
Well, I don't
that know. It was a brand built around a personality, right? An influencer. So I'd be super interested to see if someone like Ninja or Tim the Tatman made an esports team, how that team would do. Because I think there's some really interesting value in seeing like what would happen if another team was made by someone who had the same kind of, like, I hate to use the term, but clout that Nadeshot had.
Right.
Because I think if even nowadays, if you look at the brands that are doing well in that space, a lot of them have this one like figurehead character that really is what the brand is built around.
So kind of like Sean Juris and Space Station.
Yeah. And what's interesting about Space Station, because we're actually super close with those guys, we like them a lot.
Same.
Is that actually Space Station is three companies, right?
Yes, they've got integrations.
They've got integrations, and then they've also got like the social media side of things. So from that perspective, they have a lot of like redundancy around protecting each of the other brands. So if the esports team isn't doing so well, it can be covered by one of the other sides. And actually, that's super smart. And they're also really smart in that they don't go for the tier, what do we call the S tier esports titles.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very good at finding, and actually TSM were doing that to some extent too. They're very good at finding what's the next title that's going to be like tier A. And then if that gets too big and too expensive to be part of, they actually just drop out of it and find the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So like the fact that they got into Rainbow Six so early has made them this like superpower brand. And it's really just on the back of Rainbow Six being so good. And they did the same with Rocket League. Like they approach it in a really smart way.
And they're all titles that offer like organizational support as well with revenue share and such. And then they just went and won the world championship effectively in Siege as well. Like it's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Seeing what they've done.
And the growth of Siege is like, no, I don't think anyone could have predicted 2 years ago that Rainbow Six Siege going to be where it is today. No one, because no one expected Ubisoft to turn that around. And like Siege is well on its way to being a tier one esports title now. And it's literally, and the teams love it because the amount of money they make from Rainbow Six is huge. Like it's one of the most profitable leagues to be a part of. And Ubisoft is treating them super well. You know, they're having input in the game. They're having input in, you know, the merch that's being built. Like that's a great environment to be a team in.
Unlike PUBG, which tried to do a Rainbow Six Siege and basically gave out, what was it? I reported on the figures as well, I just can't remember. I think like $170 for one of the three splits or seasons or phases that they had, like for each team. Like, it's just insane. Like, SSG got out of that pretty quickly. So, like, again, they've done pretty well there. But so we're getting like last 10, 15 minutes or so. So I won't ask anything too.
Sorry.
Like,
yeah.
No, of course, man. Now, if people would watch and listen to a 3-hour podcast, and we had enough snacks and water around and stuff, then we can make it happen. But we're not prepared for that. So I want to get your take on one thing first, and we'll shift on to something else. So something relevant to what we've just been saying. If you could get your hands on one organization. And be given like free rein on it to like, you know, you could change the logo, you change the branding, keep the name, like, but like you get to completely revitalize it. Like, which one would you pick? I know that's on the spot again, but that's how I like it.
Actually, a couple come to mind. The first one that comes to mind is Cloud9.
Okay.
I do a lot with that brand. I think it's one of the coolest, potentially coolest brands ever. But also, we do speak to Cloud9 pretty closely.
Right.
So I can't talk about what we're already talking to them about. I definitely think Cloud9. I definitely think with CDL, I'm not sure I would say there's a brand that I want to work with specifically. There's a brand I want people to look at more with CDL, which is...
Can I guess? Engineer. Oh, fuck.
Sorry.
That's what I was going to guess. Shit.
Oh, there you go. I think they're a sleeping giant if they actually start winning more. I think they've got a really smart team behind them, and I think they're... branding is one of the most thoughtful of all of the teams, and it's really weird to say that because everyone can like it, but I actually think they kind of, I think they get the audience super well. Unfortunately, with COD, you just have the Hector effect,
yeah.
And the Stump effect, which is a huge positive and a huge negative in lots of different ways, because I actually think the Huntsman branding is pretty weak. But the what they stand for is super strong, and I think that Hector's landed in a place that's just perfect for him. I think he's probably having more fun this year than he's ever had in the last 5 or 6
certainly
years.
Certainly seems like it.
And it's everything he wants, right? It's a cool team. He doesn't have to be really focused on the business side because there's other people who can do that. He can just manage Call of Duty, which is the only game he's ever really loved in that sense, at that level. And he gets to just focus on content and being a personality and developing personalities. And like, he's a god at that stuff. So for me, it's like, he's just landed in this great space, and you're going to see them do super well because of that. Like, they're really going to do well because he's just in this perfect environment for him and his guys.
Yeah.
So pretty excited to see what they do, honestly. Sorry.
No, you go for it. I was just going to say quickly that I think Toronto Ultra, despite me not being a branding expert, I think like the voice they've carved out for themselves and like the stories that they're telling and such, they stand out the most to me within the league.
Well, that's it for us. Brand voice is the newest, most important thing in branding, right? Like logo is so not important when it comes to the core brand itself, right? Logo can be cool. It doesn't mean... Like a really good example someone said to me is like, do you think the Apple logo is good? Because really it's pretty shit. But everything that Apple stands for and builds around and speaks about and tells you makes their logo, makes you attribute emotion to a logo.
Right.
And that's what makes their logo good. Not the fact that it's a cool logo or not, right? So, and then so many people get hung up on the logo as the brand.
Yeah.
When actually all the things they stand for and say and how they say it and how they approach it and whether they stay true to what they say, it's like EG, right? EG's concept of live evil is super good.
I like that.
Like,
yeah.
Choosing to be the heel, especially a team like EG, where they originally had, you know, like the Gracken himself, you know, the most toxic players in gaming, and they were always seen as kind of the bad guys. Running with that is super good. But it's very hard to do that if you're not, you know, just living and breathing that. And unfortunately, like, we know Nicole pretty well. She's just a really lovely person. So it's, and they've got a bunch of really nice people on their team. So it's hard to that there's almost like a schizophrenic approach, you know, where, you know, they say a lot of evil stuff, but then they do a lot of really nice stuff and they're really positive, and it's, they could still do what they want to do with that, but there's a little bit of tweaking they need to do with that branding,
right,
to get to that point. But again, then you've got like FlyQuest, who've gone like, we're going to be green, we're focusing on the be green. And it's like, yeah, okay, it's definitely a niche group, but you can own that space, like, completely, which I think is super good.
Without a doubt. No, I mean, well, we've seen like Nicole like playing into the character quite well, like at least public facing. Like, she's starring in the videos and calling out teams and making jokes, like with the flamethrower and such. Like, it's not too bad. It's seemingly quite good so far, I think.
Yeah, we've We're definitely, we have some idea. The problem we have as a company, right, we always say this, is the way we look at things is we're just full of ideas. We just want the canvases to put them on. So we have a whole ton of concepts for EG that if they, you know, if and when they speak to us, we will talk to them about. And we probably have that same opinion for like 90% of the esports teams and brands in esports. But for us right now, the real excitement is around, you know, working with publishers and helping them develop that that scene from a higher space. But yeah, there's still that love for the esports side, which I just think is, yeah, I still love it when a team comes out with, we have a couple of brands for a couple of teams that if and when they get launched, they're going to just blow people's minds because they're just so focused, like laser focused on a particular message. I can't wait till more teams are doing that because it'll make a really exciting space.
I don't know. I look forward to seeing that, man. I've got complete faith in you. So, like, the closing question as such, right? We're going to go to a hypothetical. Say that there was a journalist, right, who's venturing into... No, hypothetical. Venturing into content creation and having to carve out a bit of a personality and such, right? He's a white English guy with a bald head and a beard, known for being quite opinionated and such. Would you say he should just keep doing what he's doing? He's Welsh. I'm English. Oh, I mean, hypothetically, the hypothetical person's English. Shit. The jig is up. How does this hypothetical person... Sorry, I keep getting mixed up. I don't know why. Very silly.
You can just say, you know...
It's not me, though. It's not me, though. So, how does hypothetical Adam take things to the next level? Like, as a person? Because, like, are personal brands really necessary, or do I just be myself?
Well, those are the same thing, actually, in my mind. I mean, you can see it by someone like Thorin, right?
I would say he leans into the Thorin like caricature almost massively.
It's the same as like when you advise like a streamer, right? On we actually do quite a bit of brand building from an emotional sense with content creators,
right?
And a lot of that is around understanding who you are and what your goals are as a person, like what you stand for, and then leaning in pretty hard to those things to build a sort of slightly larger than life version of the real you.
Right.
So that would be my first thing is say like, sit, like, I mean, as an advice to this conversation, I will happily sit down with you and do a creative exploration, as it were. Totally happy to do that. We just did one actually recently with Jake Loyne, you know, the commentator from
Overwatch.
And it's super interesting to sit with an influencer versus a brand because brands have like seven people who all have different opinions slightly of what the brand is going to be. And the influencer or an individual has a very strong opinion of what they want to be, but then you have to help them look at like what they really are. And I think having real good self-awareness is super important. And then, sorry, my dog is randomly barking.
Oh, good.
Yeah, having good self-awareness and then looking at your brand from that perspective, finding out, like, what do you want to do? What are your goals? Where do you want to be in 5 years as a brand? You know, like, so for Jake, one of the things we said is, like, what's, you know, what's a best case scenario for you? And from my perspective, it's like, oh, he should be on TV, right? He should be on mainstream television. He's got the face for it. He's got the personality for it. Like, how do we get in there? Like, from a brand perspective, like, what can we do with his branding, his image, his layout that will put him in the best place to be where he wants to be?
Not a jersey retirement.
Yeah. So I think from my perspective, that's what it would be, is like, sit down, look where you want to go, what you want to do. Like, let's say we go forward with this, right? How do you build out the podcast? How do you build out this? Could we do branding for this that makes it more exciting, more visible? Like, how do we then access, you know, where do we place these things? How do we get visibility out for them? What sort of selective people do you put into it? Because, like, I'm under no impression that I'm a B-tier for sure, maybe lower. You know, there's some huge A-tierers that you can really get into that will help, you know, propel that.
Right.
And I think that from my perspective, it's about that, right? It's about get that down on paper, right? Get a plan down a creative plan. It's like, this is where I want to be. And that will help you then work through, like, step by step, how you're going to get there. And I agree with you. I don't, it's the same as with streamers, right? You can't be a streamer and try and make a completely new persona unless you go all in on it, like Dr. Disrespect.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you better be yourself, because if you're not, try not being yourself for 8 hours a day on Twitch.
I try off of Twitch, but I just can't escape myself.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to, right? Like, you're going to have to the audience of people that like you, and the people who don't, fuck those guys.
I agree with that.
Right? Like, and because end of the day, I was actually oddly advising my girlfriend of this, because she's looking at building a company. I'm like, think of one of the things that you have a problem with and find a solution to that problem, because you're not unique. There's a bunch of other people who have the same problem as you and have the same thoughts as you. So if you fix the problem for you, you fixed it for them too. And it's the same here, right? It's like, there's a bunch of people who think and act and want to be the same way you are, but you have a voice and they don't. So how do you use your voice to help them? Right. And I think that's a big part of, like, growing your personal brand.
No, that makes sense. That sounds great. And I'll tell my hypothetical friend to get in touch.
Hypothetically, email me after this.
Hypothetically, that could work, you know. You never know. Right, so we'll wrap things up. But before we do that, you need to plug yourself. What you got coming up? Where can people find you if you want them to? So on, so forth. And we'll say cheerio.
In me fashion, I'm actually going to plug our clients and not me, because I'm not important. What we do is not important. What you see from us is what's important. So one of the clients we're super excited about right now is a company called Sunspear Games. They're building a game called Immortal Gates of Pyre. It's going to be a StarCraft 2 killer.
Okay, good luck.
I'm going to make that claim now, because if they do, I'm going to post on LinkedIn like Gary V does and be like, you see, I'm Nostradamus. So yeah, they're making a really sick game. Yeah, check them out. Also, super excited about the stuff we're doing with Blizzard and the stuff we're doing with Call of Duty. So Blizzard, Activision Blizzard, and Blizzard. I really love their team. I think they get a really bad rep because they're seen as corporate people. But they're super passionate, super cool people. They love video games and they love the community, and just having the most fun ever working with the guys from the Overwatch League and from the Call of Duty League. They're fucking awesome people. So keep an eye out for some of the really cool stuff that's going to be coming out on their social media, in their broadcasts, in their community activations. Go to these events, because the stuff they're doing is crazy. I love that. And then from our side, we're just working on really cool shit. That's what we do. We do cool shit, and we will flex on it. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's just AOE Creative. On LinkedIn, AOE Creative. We post most of our stuff on LinkedIn, because a friend of mine once said we're the shadow agents of esports. You know, there's a bunch of us out there that we always work behind the scenes for a long time, and now some people are stepping out of the shadows. Like, Adam Napasella is probably the most visible of all of us, you know, like, he's always been there. He's always been this key person in the community, but he's always been behind some really big personalities. And now finally he's stepped out of their shadow, and everyone's like, oh, this guy's doing some cool stuff. He's like, yeah, he's always been doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
No. So we aim to be in the same space, right? Yeah, that's what I will say.
Lovely stuff, right? Normally I'd plug myself at the end, but I can't bother to do that. If you want to subscribe, you can do that. If you want to follow the podcast, it's on all platforms, you can do that. If you don't want to, then that's also fine, you know? Like, it is what it is. So I want to thank you for giving me an hour of your time, and I appreciate it. Shame we haven't got longer, but I mean, I try to keep these within the hour mark, and maybe we can do a part two at some point, and you can tell me more of the cool shit you've been doing.
Been a huge honor, honestly. I love the shit you do. So I love seeing people who are just hungry in the space, and I can tell that 100% from you.
I appreciate that, man. So yeah, again, thank you for everyone who's watched and listened. If you want to follow along, you can do. Every Tuesday these come out. every Saturday Hard Carry comes out. Probably more on the way when I can figure shit out. I might need some creative consultancy there. I don't know. I'll catch you on the next one. Cheers, everyone. Cheers.